Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Thursday, March 14th, also known as Pi Day for any math lovers out there. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, hemp-based cannabis products could be subject to the same regulations as medical cannabis if a bill that passed the House becomes law. Then, in part two of our conversation with a prison rights advocate, we learn about the need for access to proper health care, plus lawmakers considering early voting as an option. The state's election official weighs in. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Conservative lawmakers in the Mississippi House want to crack down on unregulated cannabis products sold across the state. They're referred to as hemp products. Last December, a cannabis testing lab reported extremely high concentrations of TCH sold over the counter. Tests found people can buy them at the gas station, and they contain Delta-9 THC, the chemical that causes the high, and some vapes, gummies, and cigarettes. In addition to higher than allowed THC levels, the products contain pesticides and chemicals prohibited in the state's medical cannabis industry. House Bill 1676 would revise several provisions of the Mississippi Intoxicating Hemp Regulation Act and the Mississippi Medical Cannabis Act. After adopting an amendment to the measure, the chamber voted to move the bill forward 77-38. Republican Lee Yancey of Brandon authored that measure and speaks with our Will Stribling about its details.
So what happened was back in December, there were a number of reports that students were using vape products they got at gas stations, and they were high at school all day. And so one of our medical cannabis testers went and purchased many products at like 10 different stores in Rankin County. Some of them were convenience stores and some were CBD type stores, and tested those products and found that they were contaminated with pesticides, had not been cleared of those things. Some were 30 to 40 times greater than the amount of THC they were supposed to have in their products. And we learned that THCA, which is what's in the product, sort of deteriorates into THC, Delta-9 THC, over time as it sits on the shelf or when a heating element is introduced. And so the fact that we have our medical cannabis program that we've invested so much in and are trying to get started, to have these products that are competing sold right over at the gas station that haven't been tested, so they're not safe for the consumer, and kids are using them, we thought, we need to try to find, change the law so that number one, all of these would be regulated by the Department of Health. They would be required to be tested. You'd have to be 21 and up to get these products, and you have to have a license in order to sell it. And so it made sense. We're not taking the product away from the consumers who are over 21. We're just providing them a safer product, and they're going to have to go to a medical cannabis dispensary in order to get it. And so we've got all the cannabis products in one place, all the intoxicating products in one place, so that they can be more easily regulated.
And so these products that are already in these gas stations and vape shops across the state, as soon as this bill is signed by the governor, if he did that, would they immediately have to take those off the shelves?
I think the bill is they have until July 1st to do it, to get it off the shelf.
I know that this is not just a Mississippi problem. This is happening all over the country. So how do you feel about that Mississippi has been proactive here and taken this step when many other states have not, even though they're experiencing the same problem?
I think many will look to Mississippi as a leader in regulation and protection of the consumer and in protecting minors and making sure that these products are not more dangerous than they should be. and interstate commerce. The product moves state to state. The 2018 Farm Bill ensured that. But there needs to be truth in labeling, and what's inside the package needs to be labeled on the outside of the package.
Yeah, and do y'all know of any instances where I know that years ago there were people, having health problems because of the of those unregulated, untested vape products. Have y'all seen any of that happening here? Is that also a concern?
So, there are other bills addressing some of the vape issues. Of course, there's more vape issues than just CBD and THC vapes, but there are those who are, using these products. We don't yet know the long-term effects of vaping. Some think that vaping's safer than cigarettes. If you're talking about vaping, nicotine may help people to not have all that tar and all that extra bad stuff in their lungs. But the jury's still out on whether or not those products are safe. They seem to be safer so far.
And there was, I know the bill passed with overwhelming support, but there were, I think, 30-something votes against it. Do you know what the reason for opposition to this bill was from those folks?
One of two things. They liked the easy availability of these products, or they were standing up for the CBD stores who were going to lose these products. And thought it might make them go out of business. Although they can still sell, CBD and regular products that have less than 0.3% THC, they can still sell vapes and cigarettes and kratom and, whatever else, and just not the intoxicating stuff.
Yeah, they just have to get a license for that if they want to continue doing that.
That's right.
And what has the response to this legislation been from folks working in this industry in Mississippi, in the medical? I know that the medical marijuana industry already has, a messaging and image problem, and so they want the industry to be viewed positively and it to be a safe and healthy environment for them and the consumer.
Well, it didn't make sense for the medical cannabis industry not to be able to use a symbol of a marijuana leaf or certain symbols when the CBD store next door had a marijuana leaf on their door. So it kind of brings everything under one roof, under the same regulations, and I think it'll be a more even playing field for the dispensaries. Our state's program has grown as fast as or faster than any other state's. You won't hear those in the industry bragging about that because they want the numbers to go up even higher, and the numbers will go up. Right now we're at 35,000 to 40,000 cards, and we'll get to 100,000 at some point. But folks are just now really figuring out that we do have a program, and the research is still being developed on how different cannabinoids affect different debilitating conditions. And the more study is done on this product, I think there will be many, many good uses found for it for those dealing with epilepsy or cancer or, pain is one of the things that it helps with. It gives you an appetite. When you don't have an appetite, it calms your whatever's causing the seizures. Just a number of things, and more research needs to be done to continue providing a wonderful alternative to opioids and all of the side effects that they cause.
That's Republican Lee Yancey of Brandon. Next, an advocate for the incarcerated say prisons often don't have access to proper health care in part two of our conversation with the founder of REACH. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, host of the original Southern Remedy, the show where I answer your medical questions. Subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on any podcasting app.
Mississippi Antique Showcase is coming to Natchez, Mississippi, Friday, May 3rd and Saturday, May 4th. We'll have professional appraisers on site evaluating antiques, furniture, and treasured keepsakes. For a one-time gift of $100, you'll receive one ticket, complimentary food, cocktails, and a single item appraisal. Call 1-844-874-6874 or go to mpbonline.org to reserve your spot now.
MPB Think Radio, whatever your taste, news, music, storytelling, or how-to shows, whatever your city, Gulfport, Hernando, Meridian, Greenville, however you want, radio, smart speaker, smartphone app, MPB Think Radio.
At Mississippi Public Broadcasting, we tell local stories that matter. Educational and entertaining television, radio, news, and podcasts. We have something for everyone. So tune in and enjoy all we have to offer. Every day, MPB. Your stories, our mission.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. A recent report from the U.S. Department of Justice pointed out major problems in Mississippi's correction system that denies them their constitutional rights. Healthcare wasn't at the forefront of that list. A former inmate has filed a lawsuit claiming she was not given proper cancer screenings until days before she was to be released, which allowed her breast cancer to metastasize. She now has stage 4 breast cancer. In part 2 of our conversation with Pauline Rogers, the founder of REACH, which stands for Reaching and Educating for Community Hope, she discusses access to health care within prison walls, saying inmates deserve better and humane care.
Well, the thing about the people incarcerated is they don't have any control over themselves. They have been sent to a system, to prison, where somebody else is in control of the food, the medication. In the free world, you got a choice to work. In prison, they don't have a choice whether they work or not, and then they can work and there's no pay. And part of the medical problem in prison can be solved, some of it, with a simple changing of the diet. In prison, it's potatoes, breads, rice, beans, noodles. Everything is high carbs, you know, and they're eating fat. And so just about everybody in there have some form of diabetic, the onset of diabetes. Then you got people who are, is more people incarcerated on dialysis probably than they are in the free world. Dialysis is a critical thing in prison. H. pylori is critical in prison. Of course, not to mention high blood pressure. And if you have sleep apnea, so well, you just got sleep apnea. Because now what they're doing, we have a superintendent in the prison right now that is pulling pillows because it's like a, they can't have a pillow. Well, if you got a sleep apnea problem, which does not get addressed in prison at all, and their medication in prison is a one-size-fits-everybody. Everybody gets ibuprofen for everything. There was a lady that we took care of. When she came out of prison, she was one of our residents that had third-degree burns under her breast from a lack of being allergic to a medication that they were giving her. And instead of simply changing the medication, they were giving her cream to treat the rash from the reaction she was having to the medication. I took her to the homeless clinic. They even, the doctor, God bless Dr. Hargrove, and I will call her name, that simply changed the medication, and almost immediately that rash started to clear up. Almost immediately from the simple changing of medication. And people are leaving with cancers. There was a lady that we're dealing with now that has filed a lawsuit. She has filed it, not us, against DOC because they told her days to get in out that she had cancer. That
Stage 4, is it?
Stage 4 cancer. That's incurable because it has spread now to her bone, her liver. It's all over her body.
And what is she? She filed the lawsuit. What is she seeking at this point?
I don't know what she's seeking, but from what I've heard, her more thing that she's seeking more than anything is that attention will be brought for people that she left in behind, that she left behind, that are dealing with the same situation.
Do you know if anyone in state custody is being treated for serious conditions like cancer? Because you did mention they are getting dialysis, but are they getting treatment for different types of cancers?
Oh, I have a list of them. This is not new to me.
Are they getting treated, though?
Not like they should. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. There was a lady now who has been diagnosed with breast cancer, had a mastectomy. The doctor ordered by prescription that she wear a camisole because in the prison they do sports bras. They don't have supportive bras. They wear sports bras in prison. And they won't honor that prescription from the physician that this lady is to wear a camisole. So the health care, and the prison can do what they want to do. Governors, whoever can go to the prison all day long, they're going to let you see what they want you to see. They are prisons by no, don't get it twisted, are in control. They, you never get the ups on the prison. They always have the advantage because they have to open the door to let you in.
Do you foresee at any point resolution to some of these concerning issues?
I'm a person of hope, and I never lose hope. So I stand on the thing of hope. And Senator Warren Barnett, who is the chairman of the Corrections Committee here in Mississippi.
On the Senate side.
On the Senate, yeah, on the Senate side, has submitted a proposal to start the process for closing down Parchment, which is a phenomenal step forward, which Parchment needs bulldozing. But the fact that that's a win for him to submit that, and coming from Senator Warren Barnett, is above, because he had a father. His father was actually killed, murdered by somebody incarcerated, and he could be an extremist on the other end, but because he knows the right thing to do, and that lets you know that his heart is toward doing the right thing, despite his own personal impact, being impacted by the criminal justice system, by somebody incarcerated. So I commend Senator Barnett.
All right. Pauline Rogers with REACH. You are a founder.
Right.
Of REACH. Thank you so much for spending some time getting this information out about what you're doing and some of the issues that really need to be highlighted involving the criminal justice system.
Thank you.
Coming up, lawmakers consider a bill making early voting an option for Mississippians. Secretary of State Michael Watson weighs in. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
You can participate in the local MPB Think Radio programs this morning with phone calls and emails. At 9 on Creature Comforts, we'll talk about your animals and the animals around you. Get answers to your automotive repair questions on AutoCorrect at 10. And at 11, Southern Remedy Kids and Teens deals with the health of your children.
MPB Think Radio, whatever your taste, news, music, storytelling, or how-to shows, whatever your city, Gulfport, Hernando, Meridian, Greenville, however you want, radio, smart speaker, smartphone app, MPB Think Radio.
Mississippi Antique Showcase is coming to Natchez, Mississippi, Friday, May 3rd and Saturday, May 4th. We'll have professional appraisers on site evaluating antiques, furniture, and treasured keepsakes. For a one-time gift of $100, you'll receive one ticket, complimentary food, cocktails, and a single item appraisal. Call 1-844-874-6874 or go to mpbonline.org to reserve your spot now.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. The state Senate advances a bill to provide 15 days of early in-person voting. Mississippi is one of just three states without any early voting options. People can vote absentee by mail or in person, but they must meet specific requirements critics call very restrictive, such as being out of state on election day or having a disability. Senate Bill 2580 would allow voters more flexibility. 15 days before the primary, general, runoff, special, or municipal elections, they'd be able to vote. The legislation cleared the Senate Elections Committee and passed on the Senate floor Monday, 44-8. Secretary of State Michael Watson speaks with our Will Stribling about what this legislation could mean for voters.
There's been conversations about early voting for, the last few sessions, and interesting to see one time the move passed the Senate Elections Committee. There are pros and cons. Clearly, you look at some other red states, being Mississippi's considered a red state, and you see that they have been successful in implementing it. I don't think it's going to turn out larger vote numbers. I do think you may see it turn into somewhat, maybe it's not the right word, but somewhat of an arms race where you're going to have folks busing in individuals because they no longer have to have an excuse to vote early. It does cut down on the 45 days down to 15, so I do think that's a good piece. But you still have the mail-in voting option. So I think, again, you're going to have a lot more conversation before this thing gets across the finish line. I don't know where the House stands on the issue, so still a long way from home on this issue. But, again, there are pros and cons on both sides, so we look forward to hearing the rest of the debate.
Why do you think that it won't increase voter turnout? I mean, that's the main plus from the proponents of it in that committee.
Right. They already have the option to early vote, per se. It's not early voting as we're looking at now, but absentee in person. Anybody that's going to be working from 7 to 7 that's outside, you have the ability to get to the polls that day can vote absentee in person already. And there are four absentee excuses by mail, and then, again, a certain larger number by in-person voting. So I don't know that it makes it easier. It's more convenient, but I don't think convenience has shown in any state really that increase in voter turnout. So, and at the end of the day, you know, I'm a fan of Election Day. I think it's a great deal of importance for folks to come out and that, you know, the community spirit and the weight that's on our shoulders to go out and thank all the men and women who fought and died for that right to get out and vote, make sure our voices are heard. But that said, look, it's a moving target right now. Again, we'll take a look at it once the legislature gets done with it. We'll implement it if they pass it.
And then the Senate passed a ban on ranked choice voting. I know that's a policy that you've been supportive of. Can you just explain what you believe the dangers of that voting process is and why you're happy to see it banned in Mississippi?
Yeah, very thankful for Senator England and the Elections Committee getting that out on the floor. At 30,000 foot, you know, we've just talked about a little bit about voter turnout. And if you confuse the process, if you make it harder for individuals to have their voices heard, I think you're going to drive voter turnout even further down. So that's the really big argument about ranked choice voting. If you go in and you say, you know, you got 10 or 15 candidates running for a certain office, you've got to rank every one of them. If you don't rank every one of them and somebody moves on that you didn't vote for, then your voice is automatically thrown out. So you've got to do more homework. You got to make sure that you understand the process. We've seen in several states where the turnout, came to the polls a little bit lower in some instances, and specifically in Alaska and California and a couple other states, you've seen where they got the count wrong and they had to come back and correct that. I know specifically in a race in California, a guy had to sue to overturn the election because they counted it wrong. Again, when you bring in confusion and you bring in a difficult way to have your voice heard, I don't think that's good for voting in general. A few of the things that I'd point out, but those are the specifics that I think Mississippians need to be aware of at this point.
All right. And moving over to the House, they passed with an overwhelming bipartisan majority process for voting rights to be restored for nonviolent felons. It lays out that they have to complete their sentence, pay all their fines, and avoid committing any other felonies for 5 years, and then they get their voter rights back. What are your thoughts on this?
I would say, number one, there's already a mechanism to do that. It has to make its way through the legislature, and that's an individual one-by-one case there. The broad blanket approach concerns me a bit. I do think there are some needed conversations in our list of felonies that are disenfranchising. That's a conversation that's been being had probably the last few years, and one that we should look at probably in a little more depth to possibly narrow that list down. When you see violent criminals, those violent felonies are certainly ones that we want to continue to make sure that they don't have a voice in the process. But the nonviolent criminals, the nonviolent activities that we have seen that are disenfranchising crimes are probably ones that we should take another look at and possibly pare that down. So to the extent that it's a blanket approach there, I've not seen which crimes are included in that list. So we need to make sure we get that pared down as possible. The nonviolent crimes, and I think that's what the conversation was. But again, without seeing the specific language that came out of committee, I can't comment specifically on it.
That's Secretary of State Michael Watson reacting to voting-related bills moving through the legislature. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.